Hi, this is Richard Edelman, and you're listening to The Trust Makers. Hi, it's Richard Edelman. I'm here with another Trust Makers, and I'm here with my friend Almar Latour, who is chief executive of Dow Jones and publisher of the Wall Street Journal. So, Almar, I want to start out with probably the most emotional part of your life in the last 15 months, which was your work to get your reporter, Evan Gershkovich, out of the Russians' hands.
Yeah, first, thanks for having me. And you're right, that was a rather emotional part, not just for me, but for our entire organization. I would argue for the entire news industry. And it probably extended beyond that. It became a national and global story. And to Evan, of course, and his family, this was not just a story to the people involved. It was quite an ordeal. You, as a leader, and you know this from leading a large organization, your first responsibility is the well-being of your people. And the past 16 months have been extraordinary in that regard. We can now look back. Evan was released a month ago. Now look back and sigh with relief. But there was actually no guarantee that there was going to be a great outcome. You know the history of the Wall Street Journal quite well. We've had Danny Pearl, who was kidnapped, and obviously that ended in a horrific and very unjust way. During the saga of Evan, during captivity by the Russians, we saw all of a sudden during the Munich Security Conference that Navalny all of a sudden died. And this journey was punctuated with anxiety and moments of great uncertainty. But looking back, you can also say we've all seen the best of mankind throughout this. The Wall Street Journal newsroom came together. They were empowered to just push their grassroots message. It started with something simple like hashtag I stand with Evan, but it grew to become effectively a virtual movement around the world. You deal with media all the time. I've never seen the level of solidarity that I've seen in the past 16 months for Evan and to get Evan out of prison, but also more broadly for press freedom, which is so heavily under assault. So a remarkable period of time that we can all be very pleased as to how it ended. We can be encouraged by what is possible when you work together. We also must stare in the eye that press freedom is under assault. This is not over, and there unfortunately are many Evans out there.
You know, we do the trust barometer every year. You know that media actually has finished last of the four institutions behind business, NGOs, and government in the major democracies for the past 10 years. Why do you think media has such trust issues? Is it a matter of moving towards a more ideological position in the case of some media forms in order to get audience? Or is it just that somehow people don't feel as if they're getting facts, they're getting more opinion?
I think media, news media you're talking about specifically, has grown in general more distant from communities. It is because of a lack of resources, because of opportunist moves to lean one way or another way politically. News media have extricated themselves from the heart of cities, of communities. And once that's happened, that's very hard to repair because you're now out of the workflow, out of the habits, away from what people think about every day and what people do every day. Whereas not too long ago, news was pivotal to communities. So that trust is gone, but I don't think it's permanently gone. Wherever I travel, and I travel a lot like yourself throughout the U.S., but also all over the world, people crave reliable information. People are very aware of the shortcomings of the feeds that they get through social media. They're very aware of the razor-thin veneer of news that they get on various media. They're aware of the slant that they are being presented. And there is, an innate realization that unless I have good information, I cannot make good decisions. And so we all know this if you run a household or if you make your own decisions in your household, or if you're navigating your professional life or you're leading a small business or something large, if you stand or fall based on the quality of the information that you base your decisions on.
So, Elmar, do you worry about the elites having access to quality information because they can pay for it, and the mass population somehow losing access to quality news? 3,000 local newspapers have gone out of business.
Many newspapers have gone out of business. But first, something on the affordability, right? For the price of a cup of coffee, you can get access to very reliable news. And so I think the argument, which I often hear, that somehow if you have to pay for something, then you're excluding people, maybe for a part of the audience. But by and large, the expense associated with quality news doesn't have to be onerous. So that's one. Second, a lot of quality news that's available on a hybrid basis. You can get some free and some paid for. But there is another issue that's at play here, that there are only a few institutions that are successful at building this model and scaling this model. And that's unhealthy. We are at the Wall Street Journal and Dow Jones, all of our publications, we're the beneficiary of people wanting reliable information. So we see our subscriptions grow. We see our revenue grow, our profitability grow. We invest that right back to create more reliable information. Right now, because so many other sources have failed, there's a sort of a winner-takes-all effect. I hope, and I actually think, that in the not-too-distant future, and you see the seeds for this being planted right now, that there will be new organizations at a grassroots level in smaller communities, some maybe nationwide, new ideas that will be pushed forward that will create news for specific target groups, whether that's a geographical community. In Wisconsin, I saw some news organizations being created. Axios, you had Jim on here. They are doing a lot on local. And so it's actually a great time for new ideas, a great time to test new ways of reaching audiences. And those new news organizations are not going to look like the old newspaper, but they are, I think, if they do it right, they're going to fulfill the role that those newspapers played, meaning they address a need for that community to understand what's going on with their neighbors, with their business community, with their sports teams. And those needs haven't gone away. And just because social media exists, it doesn't fully answer that need currently. And so I think there's a hole in the market. I think our business model is replicable because underneath the Wall Street Journal, underneath Dow Jones, what are we really doing? We are offering expertise in certain key areas that happen to be our strengths, the business community writ large, certain industries, certain sectors, energy, risk, technology, wealth and asset management. Those are our communities. And by the way, they're global. And for us, there's a great chance to grow. But I think for new news organizations, there's scope to focus on other areas of expertise that could be local, that could be hyper-local, that could be an element of business, it could be sports. And so that reconfiguration, I'm convinced, will happen. Now, things I think will likely get worse before they get better. But I think there's opportunity. If I were not doing this job right now, I would definitely focus on building new media organizations because it's a rich strain for success there.
You, about 18 months ago, named a new managing editor, Emma Tucker.
Yes.
And Emma has brought, it seems to me, a lot of verve, panache, investigative journalism, given your reporters a lot of room to play the game hard.
Yes.
And tell us, you know, what your vision is for the Tucker administration.
Yeah. The vision for the Wall Street Journal and more broadly for Dow Jones is that we offer reliable information and expertise to help you make decisions. Okay. That's simple. When I first became publisher, I went back about 100 years into our archives and found out that Clarence Barron, a publisher at the time who named a magazine after himself, he had a mantra, and it was something along the lines of this, truth to good ends. And I really embraced that as a notion, that we have facts, we have analysis, you bring those two things together, you can make proper decisions that lead to good outcomes. So How does that connect back to our journalism? First, we have to make sure that our newsroom has the resources and the very best people in the business. If you have a charismatic and driven editor who really loves her trade, like Emma, more journalists want to work there and see this as a major opportunity. We have to make our journalism distinctive. A lot of what's not working in news media is that you can't really distinguish one piece of quote-unquote content from the next. You can't. One headline might be almost the same as in one publication going to the next. And so Emma, in our own doing, but also fully aligned with where we're going, is doubling down on unique storytelling, making sure that what we offer is proprietary, meaning you can find it with us and not with others, that we tell our stories and package our stories in a beautiful way, digitally and otherwise, that they're well told. But all along, keeping track of our core identity, which is to serve the business community. And that's business writ large. Whether you're in small business, or you're running a large corporation, or you're an employee there, or if you're running the business of your own life. But she has not lost track of the importance of acting on behalf of the customer, which is the reader, the user, and putting that person first.
And now, Mar, how global is your vision? I think you started working with Fred Kemp in Wall Street Journal Europe many moons ago.
That's right.
And how important is Asia, Europe, Latin America, et cetera, for your coverage pattern?
Well, personally, I'm blessed to have worked on three continents and many, many different countries. And that's an important part of how I see the world. We have at Dow Jones some businesses that are B2B, and so focused on serving corporate customers, and others that are more on end consumers. Our B2B businesses are global. They are a third US, a third Europe and the Middle East, and a third Asia Pacific. Mm-hmm. And at least it's not even fully global, but it's pretty equally divided amongst those three regions. My hope is, and my aspiration is, to make sure that the Wall Street Journal can have a similar a reach around the world. Right now, there's still a heavy contingent here in the U.S. Most of our business is in the U.S., but we're very active in Europe. We're very active in Asia, but I see plenty of growth there for us. I see growth in the U.S. I see growth in Europe. I see growth in Asia. Why? Because we serve a global business community. So wherever effectively people are conducting business, they will need reliable information. And that's a simple thesis, but it's absolutely true. People crave that information, and we will be there to help them. New technology is going to make that threshold of entering new markets a lot lower. Back when I was posted in Hong Kong or in London or in Brussels or other places, new languages for the Wall Street Journal would mean having to build a small army of translators, finding ways to do local marketing, finding local partners. And some of that might still hold true, but translation through AI is getting so good that the threshold for entry into new languages will be much lower. And so we'll see that come into display for us in the coming year, I would say, in some markets. And over time, I think we'll be able to bring the journal to many more languages in which we can operate than we do today.
And the conference business, the Wall Street Journal House at the Cannes Ad Festival, or the in Davos, or even the Wall Street Journal CEO Confab in D.C. at the end of December.
Or Journal House yesterday at Bryant Park.
During UNGA. So what's that business orientation?
So the events and the Journal House is a physical manifestation of all of our brands and all of our capabilities, effectively. It's a house or a location. It's a way to bring that community together in a physical way, to facilitate peer-to-peer connections, to allow our readers and users to ask questions of the people that we feature in stories and articles and other parts of Dow Jones and the Wall Street Journal. But there's also a conceptual shift taking place. So Dow Jones and the Journal effectively have moved from being a business news publication to an information service company that has business news at its core. And instead of thinking of this, Richard, as an events business, we have shifted the concept to this is a learning business. So yes, we will still have physical events, but we recently announced that we're going to launch the Dow Jones Leadership Institute. We brought in Alan Murray, formerly at Fortune, to head that up. But the idea is that in order to be successful and in order to be an expert for our communities, we have to have the best in business news in that area. We have to have data that's unique and proprietary. So we do research and such. And we have to have analytics and the ability to do forecasting and research. And we have to be able to make peer-to-peer connections. And so that's what we will be offering to leaders about what it means to be a manager and what it means to be a leader right now. But we're also doing that in energy. We're doing that in risk. We're doing that in wealth and asset management. And in the future, we'll be doing that in many, many industries, offering those four things. And so there's this conceptual shift that really underpins the whole strategy of Dow Jones, that we are an information service company. I sometimes explain this thinking of Dow Jones as a Rubik's Cube. Inside of it, you've got all the data and journalism and analytics, and that actually exists in a data lake, right? And each little tile on the Rubik's Cube is one way, metaphorically, of how an end user might want to consume something that is relevant to them, whether that's based on their industry or their profession or the situation that they find themselves in. And so by repositioning and reorganizing our sprawling news and information organization, and by introducing new technology, and by coupling all of this with generative AI in the present, but even more so in the near future, and we can actually make that vision a reality.
So we're, give or take, 5 weeks out from the election, and CEOs are trying not to be political in any way, keep their heads down, whatever. At the same time, they're being confronted by activists pushing them from the right. You have people from the left. What advice would you have for CEOs in this time of turmoil?
Well, first of all, you have to be aware of your own convictions. If you are not in touch with what you really think, you could find yourself drifting into the issue du jour or the forces or the winds that blow in a certain direction. And that is not at all a theoretical situation. I think it's very tempting almost for leaders to just do a vox pop, sense where the mood is and go in that direction. I think understanding which issues you care about and how you personally want to navigate those. Second, you need to understand what is you, and that is what you say at your kitchen table, what you share with your family and with your friends, and what is appropriately deployed in a corporate arena, which those two things are not the same. Sometimes they overlap, sometimes they don't. So I would say keep those two things in mind. Third, these are very volatile times. And so you should mentally prepare to expect the unexpected, that every day brings a new twist or could bring a new twist. And if you anticipate that you will be presented with something that you didn't expect, I think you're better prepared when those situations come your way.
So last question is around Barron's. I think that your new team has made this a must-get for PR people to try and get CEOs interviewed, that in fact, it leads where the stock's going to go as opposed to after the stock's already up, that you know, Barron's is back to being really important. What did you do there and how did that happen?
Well, first of all, thank you. We've seen a phenomenal rise of the number of subscribers and the digital usage over the past 4 or 5 years at Barron's, even longer actually. One thing that Barron's has done well, and this really underlies the whole thesis for both the journal and for Dow Jones, is that it was aware of why it exists. This is what we focus on. And in their case, they are focused on investments and whether they are sensible or not. Yeah. And instead of becoming something else as a publication, as they shifted from being a magazine to effectively being a digital entity with a lot of recurring revenue and highly profitable, instead of giving in to a lot of trends du jour, we said, no, this is exactly what we do. and we're going to double down on it, and we're going to do it better than anyone else. Because it was an area where change was possible, it attracted a number of individuals that were super highly talented and energetic. David Cho, the most recent new editor-in-chief there, is such an individual who is so passionate about this very task and sees a role in the world for giving that advice. And good talent attracts other good talent. There's a sense of possibility there. But because of the success at Barron's, we gained the confidence that we can do this for everything at Dow Jones, whether that's MarketWatch, the Wall Street Journal, or more B2B services like risk or energy. And that is, don't forget who you are. A lot of publications, a lot of news entities, a lot of media companies, forgotten why they exist. And if you can't answer that for yourself, then what's the end user going to do? So it's probably the most important lesson in media right now. Be aware of your unique advantage.
I want to thank you for coming on my podcast, and you and I will stay on these issues. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for tuning into The Trustmakers, an Edelman podcast in partnership with Advertising Week, where we speak with leaders and other trust builders across institutions. See you next time.